Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 everybody, to Moore's Talk Live 100. Everybody, I'm Tahaka, and tonight is part two, creditors, bonds, 1099A, 1099C, and the original issue discount, commonly known as the 1099OID. We're going to be trying to cover as much grounds as we can, and before we get down into the broadcast, I'm going to start up where I left off at. On our last broadcast, which was right there at rule number three, keep in mind there is no money. I mean, I've said this over and over and over again. Under rule number three, it states the following. What do you use to pay your bills? If there is no money, what does the state use to pay its bills? Do you really have any bills? Whose name on the contract? With the electric company, the mortgage, the credit card, or the student loan. It isn't your name. It is a straw man's name. The Constitution says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin as tender in payment of debt. Well, there it is. A prohibition against the states. Does it say the United States or its agents can't use something other than silver gold for payment of debt? No. Since there is no gold or silver coin in circulation in the United States and all the businesses you have grown to love and in the United States, it is a good thing the United States has created a straw man for you to control and Federal Reserve notes for it to use, or you would use money. If you had some, the straw man is able to pay all his bills with Federal Reserve notes. You can't. But the straw man can. Isn't it neat that you can control a straw man, a person? The trouble is the straw man can't get a real title or anything with the Federal Reserve notes. You can get possession of the substance, but you can only get to retain possession as long as you stay in honor. The straw man stays in equity honor, and you fulfill your fiduciary duties as the presumed trustee. If you choose to go into dishonor, you voluntarily give up possession of whatever property the state wants to take to get the credit it needs to keep its business ventures going. Nothing personal, just business. Okay, now to me that's just as plain as it gets. It don't get no plainer than that. I mean, it couldn't have been put no plainer. All right, let's get on back here to the broadcast. And what we're going to do is we're going to start out by dealing with this 1099A. We're going to be answering the following question: what is a 1099? What is a 1099A? How do you fill out a 1099? Where do you get the forms from? Can you discharge your debts with a 1099? Can we pay for items with a 1099? What do you do with a 1099-C? We're going to try to cover as much as we can tonight, but right now we're going to start off with our first plug, and when we come back, then we'll be going into the commercial. So y'all hold your hat, pay close attention.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit today about the 1099-A and 1099-OID. First thing you have to understand is that your straw man corporation, which is your name in all capital letters, it was set up with your birth certificate. They made it into a bond. Bond is a promise to pay money at a later date, and the bond was placed into a trust. And the trust is housed at one of the 12 Federal Reserve banks within the United States. And that's evidence on the back of your Social Security card. You'll see a letter A through L, which designates which Federal Reserve Bank is housing your bond trust account. And so, and there's 10 of them. So there was a new bankruptcy initiated, or a new loan contract initiated in June of 1999. So if you have an older Social Security card, you can tell them that you lost it and just go down and get a new one. And then you're allowed to get 10 of them over your lifetime, because there is 10 bond accounts that are set up. They hypothecate it 10 times. And I mean, as far as Federal Reserve notes are concerned, the powers that be are just rolling in it. I mean, there's trillions and zillions of dollars. And the only reason that we don't have it down here is because we've been schooled in public school, which is debtor training. And that leads me to my next point, is that they lead you to believe you're a debtor, but in every instance where you go to interact with any kind of a bank or lending institution like a bank, for example, let's say you want to go and take out a loan to purchase a house. A human being can't, on the public side, can't borrow money from a corporation. That's why I tell people, when you go to fill out your loan application, there's no one else there saying, okay, we're going to lend you money, because you're actually the one loaning the bank the money or the credit, because you're the signatory to the bond account, and that's all the only money that there is in the world or in this country. And you're the authorized representative of that account, evidenced. If you still use a checking account, you can look at a check where you sign it, and it'll have a little MP next to the check signature line. And if you get a microscope and look at that, it'll say real tiny micro print. It'll say authorized representative signature only. So you're the authorized representative for your treasury bond account that was placed in a trust at your birth. And through certain procedures, you can take claim to that, because you're considered lost at sea, or you're considered, it's considered abandoned property. So all you have to do is kind of like notice them that, hey, I want my my property back. And then what you would have to do is settle every account that you've ever opened. Every checking account or every contract your strawman has ever entered into is still active and open, unbeknownst to you and 99% of all the other people in this country. Now, I'll just preface by saying this. I am not qualified to give tax or legal advice, so don't try any procedures that you're not comfortable with. But keep in mind this. Say you have a, and this happened to a guy just the other day, who called me and told me he had a successful outcome of this procedure. So what happens when you you go and do what's called a loan application? What they do is they access your credit, which you have unlimited credit through the Federal Reserve bond trust account that was set up at your birth, evidenced by your birth certificate. They're the intermediary that can tap into that. They have some special things that allows them to do that. So they keep it all hidden. But so here's what happens when you sign a loan document. You're actually loaning the bank the credit, and then they take the note that you sign and they deposit that into an account as an asset on the asset side of their ledger, and then they debit, they write you a check for whatever the amount is that you said through the deed of trust that you're going to pay back. So they didn't actually loan you anything, they just loaned you your own credit, basically. And you're paying interest for a 30-year period. Well, they sell the service contract to a servicing company, and it's usually in another state. I think Connecticut is one where they do it, where they have laws that allows them to do that. And then every payment that you make is placed into an escrow account. And then when you're done making all your payments, you sell the house, whatever, or you pay it off through, like, you sell the house or flip the house or whatever. So you pay that off, and they wait like 3 months, and then go to the IRS and go, hey, someone abandoned this account and this money in this escrow account. You mind if we keep it? And they go, yeah, sure, you can keep it. And that's what's going on there. But what you can do, there's something called a 1099-A, which allows you to acquire or abandon an account. Because it's your account, and the money, the interest, really should be going to you. And what this guy did was, he filled out a 1099-A acquisition and sent it registered mail to the bank or the loan company. And he waited 10 days. Also, too, I recommend that anybody that deals with the IRS and you're going to do some processes with them, to always file online, because you're going to know immediately if it goes through, if your paperwork goes through. And because if you don't, if your procedure just gets dumped into the trash, they're not going to tell you, and then you might find yourself with a frivolous filing letter, and then you'll have to deal with that. So I recommend, when you're dealing with the IRS, and they're there to help you, they're held to balance the books of your straw man account. That's all they're there to do. You know, when you're dealing in these commercial procedures, that I don't recommend that you do, but some people out there do them, and I have detailed files on how these things are done. I don't recommend them. You can go to stopthepirates.blogspot.com and get your hand on it. But with the 1099 A, he sent a registered mail to the company, and he had like a $750,000 balance on a mortgage. And about 10 days after he did that, he went online and checked his account, and his account read zero. And then you want to wait 30 days, and then you can file the same 1099 copy with the IRS. And then you can put that as income on your 1040. That's how that works. So in everything you've basically learned about how the system works, about money, you've been taught nothing about money or any of these things. You really need to figure out how this works. We all do, because we're living in the dark, and you know, we need to get past, you know, there's no law that says we need to pay taxes. Well, there is no law that taxes your labor, because the tax is being used because you're using these commercial instruments, these Federal Reserve notes. You're operating in commerce. And because you're using the Federal Reserve notes, you're considered an expert in how commerce works, and security instruments, and Federal Reserve notes, and checks, and electronic transfers, and anytime you deposit a check, you write a check, and anytime you sign anything, you're creating money. You're creating a security. And legally, you should be compensated if that security is being used is being sold out there as a credit default, not a credit default swap, but it's being sold on the international stock market as a security. And technically, every time you write a check or you deposit a check in the bank, you're creating a security, an international security that's being sold on the international stock market. And technically, you're the original issuer, and you should be. A lot of people are very leery about 1099 OIDs, but technically that's how the system should work. Because we are the bankers. We're the bank. Without us, the banks have nothing. The banks are just corporations. They're stacks of paper in a vault, in a file somewhere. They don't have any money. They don't. They don't loan money. There is no money, and that's what we have to wrap our heads around. So you can find out about how a 1099A works and how you can use that to close a mortgage account. And like I said, the guy just—I don't have a $750,000 mortgage, or I would have done that a long time ago. I choose to go another route, but I just wanted to let everybody kind of know that there's having successes out there. If you're in having trouble with your mortgage, anything like that, go to stoppirates.blogspot.com. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Okay, everybody, we're back. Let's go deal with what we were discussing. Now, we just got through dealing with the fact that there is no money. So we got it. It's difficult for us to wrap our head around that, because we got these debt notes and the whole United States is leading everybody to believe that, well, okay, this is money, and you owe me money, and all this. But here we go. When the state invites the straw man to participate in one of the revenue events, you have options. The presumption is that you will volunteer to represent the accused straw man. They are pretty sure you would do that because you always have before. Think of the event as a play. The play has actors with scripts. Each actor knows the plot, his lines, and the outcome. Their play has been practiced over and over in every country and in every state. The outcome is always the same. A man, not one of the scheduled actors, crashes into their party and carries out the plot. Without the man, the whole plot changes. The outcome changes. They need the man to get the same ending as they always have before. When the man does not participate in their play, there's confusion and chaos. The planned script does not work without the man. The usual scenario includes the man volunteering to represent the accused straw man as a trustee. Each time a straw man is charged, a new trust is created. It is even possible that each time the straw man's name is spelled in a slightly different way in the complaining presentment, a different trust is created. There might be two or four different trusts referenced in the same presentment. Each trust is going to produce income for the plaintiff if the script is followed as planned. It all has to do with trust. Everywhere you look, there are trusts. The straw man is a trust when it is named on a complaint, indictment, or traffic ticket. Sometimes it is a CSK trust when it is the beneficiary of another trust. Sometimes it is the trustor or another trust. Sometimes it is the corporation sole. Sometimes it is the defendant. Sometimes it is the plaintiff. Sometimes it is the debtor. Sometimes it is the creditor. Sometimes it is a secured party. It is a very versatile vehicle or tool. There are always at least three parties to a trust. No one owns a trust on the private side, but on the public side, there is always a responsible party who is deemed to be the owner of the trust. There is a fallacy that is often used by the state in relation to trusts that have real property as the trust corpus. They always want to know who the owner of the trust is. A trust is just an agreement among three or more parties. The trustee holds the legal title to the trust corpus and is the one deemed to be owner of the public trust. It is useless to argue with public property or is involved in the Federal Reserve notes. It qualifies as a public trust. The beneficiary holds the equitable title to the trust corpus. The title is bifurcated. That's a tough one there. I got to look that one up. But nevertheless, we're gonna move on here and going on down. We're still dealing with this 1099A, so y'all hold on a moment.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. What we got going on here today is apparently the 1099A and the 1099C video is pretty popular. There's been over 700 views on it so far in just the last couple of days. Yesterday we went over 11,000 views on the channel. And I want to thank everybody for taking their time out. Man, our time is valuable. You only got so much of it here in this world. So I do appreciate the time that y'all are taking to watch these things. But here's what's going on. I did that video to help people out. You to use this, okay? And like I said, there's over 700 views on that one, and there's a lot of the other videos that I put on there that, are not even 200 yet. So when I see the numbers like that, I realize that that video is getting watched a lot more than the other videos. And I understand that the video that I posted a couple of days ago on the 1099A and C, that a lot of you have shared with your other friends, and I'm totally cool with that. Put it out there. The whole reason I'm into doing what I'm doing is to change the way things are now. And by using the process to change your situation, you also change the future. So that's why I'm putting this out here. I want to change the future. I want to have a part in changing the future. And I'm sure most of y'all do too. And you will with your progeny. What I want to do now is I want to talk about the 1099A. Because here's the thing. A lot of you that watch the 1099A, 1099C, have hit me with a lot of questions and a lot of the same questions. And I'm suggesting that you go back and watch the videos that you haven't watched. It may be time consuming, yeah. But most all of them videos have a little piece of something or another in there that you can compile into a notebook of information, so to speak, to use this. Like, for instance, I was talking about the when I was talking about the 1099 a couple of the questions that I got from people that have actually been doing this, and they're not having any success with the 1099A. And the reason that they're not doing it is having success with it is because they're not filling them out proper. And that's why they're not working. These folks that I've talked to have been doing this for quite some time. And what I'm saying is if you go back and you look at these other videos, you're going to glean stuff from them that when you get around to watching the 1099A, you're going to go, oh, yeah, okay, I understand. I see what he's talking about. When you fill out the 1099A, okay, you'll notice that who the lender is. It's the United States Treasury. And who the borrower is, okay? Like I said in the last video, these are checks. But really how you're going to use it is like a third-party check, okay? That may clarify some of the questions that y'all have. You know, the reason that they're not working for you if you've tried them is because you're putting the person up there in the top as the lender, like, say, the dealership. And then you're putting yourself as the borrower. That's not how it works. What the dealership's going to do is they're going to take this, they're going to file it with their 1040, right, V, and then what's going to happen is they're going to be the third party in the check. Because they filed the 1040, the return's going to come back to them. And because you signed the back of the check, the Treasury's going to know that when they file, okay? So that's where a lot of y'all, I guess, are probably having the issue at. It's the Treasury. Why? Why is it the Treasury? Because the Treasury is the grantor of the Social Security SESTA K Trust. They're holding the trust for the Social Security Administration. The Social Security Administration is the administrator of the trust, and the United States Treasury is the bank of the trust. Okay, that's where your money goes. When you get a Social Security check or a VA check, they used to come by paper, but now they come electronic. And when I look at my bank statement, my VA check, my Social Security check, they all come from the Treasury. The Treasury is the bank. Okay? So the Treasury is the lender. Why? Because they are the trustee. This is why you need to go back and look at some stuff. And in a trust action, okay, the trustees are the ones that hold the beneficial title. They hold the property. They hold the property in trust for the beneficiary. That's why it's not working. So it doesn't matter. In the case of this right here, folks, this is just an example of the 1040A that I filed. Well, I filed, like I said, I filed 15 of these, but I also filed 15 OIDs, and I also filed 1096s because of the process that I was doing with the 1099As and the lien securities that we created. That's why it says lien security so these are going to be a little different than yours. Okay. Now see, here's the thing. Like I said, you're the beneficiary of the trust. You go to the dealership or the bank, the mortgage company, whatever, the furniture store. You want to buy furniture over $600. You go to the furniture store. Well, they can take this, okay? Here's where this works. People have asked about secured party. How ought to become a secured party creditor? Well, you are a secured party to your Social Security certificate trust, but to become a secured party creditor, you have to know what's in the trust. And you are, if you think about it, the money you put in every year, they tell you how much you put in. So you are a secured party creditor, but only for the amount that you know is in there. If I filed $204 million of these things, okay, and the Treasury gets 35% for collecting, well, then $132.6 million is mine. Now, I know that that much is in, that at least that much is in my trust, plus the, you know, 19,000, you know, not quite 20,000 that I put in working a public job, which isn't much, folks. I mean, for a lifetime, an adult lifetime, it isn't a whole lot. Because I've learned how to, you know, to get around everything, man. People on welfare, they're getting around it, man. They're bringing in a check and not having work. Hey, more power to you. But it's greater than that. It's greater than that. You don't have to live in the projects, and you don't have to get all this other stuff. If you're knowing how to use the trust, like the Department of Human Services is using the trust. Okay. now, so that's what you're going to want to do with the 1099A, and I'm sure there'll be more questions. And I don't mind answering your questions. If this is the only one of my videos, or the last video, the 1099A, 1099C, is the only one of my videos you watched, go back and watch the rest of them. You know, some of them you might not get a whole lot out of, but most of them you will. And this is a puzzle. This is a giant puzzle that needs to be put together for you to get into the mindset of who you really are as the beneficiary. You got a lot of power, and it's not your power to use. It's your power you have that they will use to either fleece your trust or put you along a right path while they're fleecing your trust. I don't care if the government fleeces my trust. I don't care at all. As long as you're paying up for what I need, take what you want. Like I said in past videos, in Ray Boland's, every taxpayer's a SESTA-K trust. You know, if the trust, I'm the beneficiary. I'm not a trust. I'm not a SESTA-K trust. It's a SESTA-K trust that owes the taxes. So if taxes are due, you get it, trustee. I'm the beneficiary. I'm not even supposed to know there's taxes due. And I explained that in another video. But, and I don't mind answering y'all's questions one-on-one, but there's a lot of questions that I've been asked here recently that I know, because when you ask me this question, I know that you haven't seen any of the other videos or it went completely over your head. And that'll happen, man. I've had all kinds of stuff go over my head before I finally figured it out. You know, I know some people want to get in on this Zoom, but they don't say, hey, man, send me a conditional acceptance so I can get in on this Zoom. Why? Because you haven't watched the one on conditional acceptance and where I'm talking about this. It's like this, you know. How is it that the Treasury, you know, that the Treasury can do all this? Because if you'd watch the video on Free the Prisoner, Discharge the Bond, you'll see that I talked about the House Joint Resolution 92, where it created the Public Law 73-10, where it says the government is supposed to pay for everything. This is how they do it. So, you know, go back and watch the other videos. If you haven't seen them yet, you're going to know because they're not in your watch list. Go back and look at them and then, you know, and then hit me up with questions that you don't understand or, you know, that you want me to elaborate on. I'll be more than happy to do that. But, you know, look, this has gotten completely time consuming, and I don't mind doing that. I really don't mind at all. But I would ask you kindly to go back and look at them all so you get a better understanding. Because it's like I said, if you don't know who you are, what they're doing, and what you can do, and how this thing works, when you go and try this at the dealership or the mortgage company, you're going to fall flat on your face, and they're probably going to laugh at you all the way out. So you guys do that. I'm going to do another video on the 1099-C because a lot of people have had questions about that. Many of y'all have debt. Many of y'all have debt. And you want to get rid of it. The 1099-C will do that. You know, but I've been asked questions, well, how do you, you know, how do you file that? You don't. You don't. It's the trustees that have to file that. It's the trustees that are going to file the 1099-A. You're just giving them the way to do it. That's why I said in the last video, it's the dealership, it's the mortgage company, it's the furniture company that's going to file the 1099-A. Well, I don't want to file 1099-A. I can get in trouble for it. No, you won't. You didn't file it. And another question, a couple more questions that I got that are the same are on the W-8-B-E-N. And I'm going to do a video on that explaining how to fill one out so you can keep your FICA taxes. Here's the thing about the BEN. I'll just throw this out there right quick before I quit. The thing about the BEN is they've been doing this for 20, 30 years, filing the BENs. I got a friend who's a retired auto worker. He worked for for Dodge, making the Vipers and the Prowlers for 15 years, and then he worked on some other Dodges on before that. But this guy worked 18 years without filing you know, anything at all because he filed the W-8. And they haven't messed with him at all. A lot of the other auto workers did the same thing. So the thing about the BEN, the W-8 BEN, is it's totally legit. And for more than two decades, workers have been filing it. But I'll get in on how to file that, too, real soon. But all right, y'all. Peace out.
Okay, everybody, we're back. We're going to go down in these commercials. When we come back, then we're going to get down this thing because we're going to deal with what makes all this possible. What happened back in the day? And we got Crawford's going to come in and explain that to you. And but for right now, y'all hold your hat and so you can know where to get started on your secure party and your creditor and the different documentation and stuff that you're going to need to know. And we got that right over there at TahakaDebtElimination.org. Y'all hold on a minute.
What a fantastic way to live. Hello, I'm Tahaka Amana L. Bay, operating in the private as a secured party and creditor instead of living the life of a debtor. Now, to learn how to do that, you have to get the knowledge. There's no doubt about it. You don't mix public with private, just like oil and water don't mix. For the skill and know-how, go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Contact me, Tahaka. My number is on the website. Or send me an email. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Learn how to live the good life as a secured party and a creditor instead of a debtor. And eliminate your debts. Fun time is almost over. TahakaDebtElimination.org. Peace. Credit card debt, student loan debt, lawsuits, child support, mortgages, foreclosure, secured party and creditor. Get my free report. Go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. What kind of trust do you set up? How do you use a trust? What do you put in a trust? For the solution, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. Get my free report by going to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Driver's license, freedom to travel, Who exactly needs a driver's license? What did the U.S. Supreme Court rule about it over and over again? How does that work? What is proper syntax grammar? Get my free report. Go to TahakaDataElimination.org. Fill out the little contact form. Put your email address in there. That'll come straight to me and I'll rush it directly to your email. TahakaDataElimination.org. Real estate is booming today. But one thing I learned a long time ago about mortgages and foreclosures, the real estate market goes in cycles, up and down. The best thing to do is get out of that type of situation early. The U.S. corporation is still operating in a bankrupt state today. Make no mistake about it. When it comes to your home, the bank has no skin in the game. When you sign for your home, it was paid for. Learn how to do that. The IRS is a private-for-profit corporation. Learn how to deal with that. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. How do you discharge debt? How do you write it up? What do you do? Learn how to do that. Contact me, Tahaka Manuel Bay. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Peace. Hello, everybody. I want to introduce you to The Great Debate by Dr. Walter Williams. He single-handedly laid out the facts in this powerful debate against Mr. Munir Muhammad of the Nation of Islam, Chester Blair, a prominent lawyer in Chicago, Illinois, and Reverend Henry Hardy, a prominent minister in Chicago, and Prince Aziel ben Israel of the Hebrew Israelites. This debate was hosted by a retired policeman named W.L. Lillard. Now, the whole thing was a setup by Lillard and his gang, but it didn't work. They brought what they believed to the table, but Dr. Walter Williams brought what he knew for a fact and what he could prove and laid it on the table. We are now in the age of knowing. The age of walking around believing this stuff is over. For your copy of The Great Debate, go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org, or contact me by phone. My number's on the website. Oh, and by the way, the lawyer got bust up too. The Great Debate, get your copy today. Good day and peace.
All right, everybody, we're back. Now, we're going to go on down in this thing, and I'm going to go back over here, and we're going to look at the definition of some of the words that we've been dealing with. For instance, trust, a legal entity created by a grantor for the benefit of designated beneficiaries under the laws of the states and the valid trust instrument. Indenture, the document which contains the terms and conditions which governs the conduct of the trustee and rights and of the beneficiaries. Exchanger, exchange, to part with, give or transfer for an equivalent. Trustor, one who creates a trust, also called a settlor. Settlor, the grantor, a donor in a deed, a settlement, also one who creates a trust. Trust corpus, trust property, the property which is the subject matter of the trust. The trust rest. One who creates, the creator is one who creates. Trustee, person holding property in trust, one who holds legal title to property in trust or for the benefit of another person, the beneficiary, and who must carry out specific duties with regard to the property. Legal title, one which is complete and preferred so far as regards to apparent right of ownership and possession, but which carries no beneficial interest in the property, another person being equitably titled thereunto. Beneficiary, one who benefits from act of another. Equitable title, a right in the party to whom it belongs to have the legal title transferred to him or the beneficial interest of one person whom equity regards as the real owner. Surety, a person who is primarily liable for payment or debt performs the obligations of another. Creditor, one to whom money is due, and an ordinary acceptation has reference to financial or business transactions. The original straw man trust, mom was the exchanger, truster, settler. Mother applied to the state of Louisiana for the creation of a trust. She chose the date of the birth for the she chooses this name. She requested evidence that it had been created, equals a birth certificate. She was the informant. She delivered the paper description of the original property to the trust creator. It was a description of the real substance. The paper descriptions were the original trust corpus. More trust property be added later. State of Louisiana was the creator of the original trust. The state complied with mom's request and created a straw man with the name and date of birth your mother requested. She applied for the Social Security number for it. She put it into commerce by getting it medical numbers. A daycare center matriculation number, a public school matriculation number, a little league ID number, a library card number, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes the creator is also the original exchanger, truster, or settler. Okay, that's just a little bit of the terminology that goes along with this stuff. But we're moving along fast, so we're going to get on down in here. And y'all just hold on a minute. Let me go ahead and refresh this here thing here and make sure that everything is just right. So we want to know now, how did all of this here come about? And so let's dig on down in here and get in here. Y'all hold your hat. And one other thing I like to mention to you, we're going to come back with some more of this stuff after this broadcast. And keep in mind that me and Dr. Walter Williams will be on at the last center this month. I talked to him yesterday. We got a show we're going to put on for the last Sundays of this month. So make sure that y'all be here the final Sunday of the month of July. So y'all hold your hands. Here we go.
Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from Sweden, Scandinavia. On Thursdays and Sundays, we are here addressing important and interesting subjects with authors, researchers, and filmmakers on a wide variety of subjects. Our website is redicecreations.com. That's R-E-D-I-C-E creations.com. There you will find news, radio, videos, links, and resources, our forum, and of course our member section, and much more. I'm glad you're here today. We have an important topic that we are going to focus on. We have author Mary Croft with us on the line. She is the author to a book called, I really like this title, it's called How I Clobbered Every Bureaucratic Cash Confiscatory Agency Known to Man. And the subtitle is A Spiritual Economics Book on Money and Remembering Who You Are. We're going to talk about money and the concept of natural persons compared to artificial persons, words, law, government tricks, and much more. Mary's website is spiritualeconomicsnow.net. I suggest you head over there and do take a good look around. So it's great to have you with us online, Mary, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, and thank you.
Why don't we do like this? We could begin to talk a little bit about you for listeners who might not be familiar with you or your work. In regards to research and the work that you've been kind of doing, tell us a little bit about your background in this.
Well, you know, my background is probably similar to most of the rest of us who are doing this, and that is that we got beaten up in some way by the alleged authorities. Like somehow, somewhere along the line, something occurred in our lives and we said, hey, wait a minute. This just isn't right. There's something wrong here. We didn't know what it was, but we knew that we were not to be treated like this, whether it's anything from ridiculous traffic violations, whether it's incarceration, whether it's IRS, CRA, ATO, IR, you name it, where I don't know what your tax agency is called over there. Whether it doesn't matter what it is, we all came away from it saying, okay, there's something wrong, and that includes, you know, the banks foreclosing on your house, credit cards, collection agents ringing you and saying, you owe us this much, but you notice they'll never put it in writing. I mean, you just have a feel for it, and you say, okay, I got it. There's something wrong here. Something's going on that shouldn't be going on. And so you start investigating, and you start talking to people, and I, like everybody else, started chasing the best information. And then when I had a hint of it, what I did was I started experimenting, because I contended, and still do, that the cause of every single problem on this planet, and I mean every single problem that is on this planet, is caused from the infliction of commerce by the banks onto the people. The banks have destroyed what might normally have been a decent lifestyle. And I'm not talking the past 100 years. I'm talking hundreds of years. Now, that even stems back as far as the Crown and the Vatican. I don't really want to go back that far because, first of all, most of us weren't there. But for the last 75 years at least, by that I mean Western countries, have been operating in a state of bankruptcy. And, in fact, these countries do not even have a government. We've been without a government. We've had de facto governments, but that's not real, not de jure governments. And it's all because we've been operating within a bankruptcy. And that happened in 1933 when in the States and Canada anyway, and probably over there in Europe, you know, they did away with anything with which we could use to pay any debt. So what happened was the government, essentially, the alleged government, said, well, seeing as you can't pay your debts anymore because we've withdrawn all the gold and silver and we're in bankruptcy, but we're not telling you that, we will pay your debts for you. But what happened was, although they designed a remedy, and they just decided not to tell us because it would behoove the banks to control the people of the world by enslaving them. And what's the best way to enslave them is to enslave or steal their labor and their lives. So people started believing that they had to pay for things when, in fact, we don't. And then what happened is they started laboring, and the fruits of their labors, commonly known as dollars, got stolen from us because they essentially programmed us to believe that we're required to pay for things we need and want. And it simply isn't true. So we start going out trying to get better and better jobs. That's nice. And in order to get more cash, in order to pay them. But the thing is, there's two completely separate accounting systems, and we are not permitted to pay public debt with our labor, which is private. So they've kind of mixed up the two systems of accounting and enslaved us in the process. Now, there's a whole bunch of detail surrounding all that. So, I mean, you can start firing questions at me from there if you want.
Yes, yes. I mean, there's so many areas, of course, that we can touch upon in regards to background to all of this. And of course, what you mentioned is going to be familiar with too many of our listeners in regards to at least the American, you know, version of this, so to speak, because in many contexts, to many researchers that are looking into these areas, they are primarily talking about what is going on in the North American Union. So what I want to ask you like right away, because we have a European audience, we have many people from Australia as well as in, you know, various countries around Europe and South America as well. But in regards to, let's say Europe then, you know, if these kinds of laws that you're talking about, either if we're talking about commerce or other law, that this is something that is applicable in Europe as well as to the United States and North America?
Yes. Nobody in the Western world is operating under any law anymore other than the Golden Rule, and that is that we're not to infringe upon anybody's person, rights, or property. In other words, we, you know, do unto others how we want to be treated, we want to treat others. So that's the only real law that there is. And everything else that we think of as laws are not laws. They're statutes, codes, rules, regulations, ordinances, bylaws, constitutions, legislations. What did I leave out? They have nothing to do with us. They are simply the policies of the corporations, which appear to be governments, but they're not. And let me use the USG as an example.
Mm-hmm.
The United States government is just a slick corporation, a form foreign private belligerent corporation, which happened to be crafty enough to call itself the United States government. But it has nothing to do with what we think of as the country called the United States of America, nor is it a government. It's simply a corporation. And people actually think they're going to march to the polls and elect a president of this corporation. Well, no corporation in the history of commerce has ever had an election for their CEO's presidents. They're all appointed. Think of Sears Corporation. But anyway, getting back to your question, which right. is, that how does this apply in Europe, for example? Well, the only law under which we all operate is actually not a law. It's a code, and it's called the Uniform Commercial Code.
Yes.
When they did away with any actual laws, which probably happened somewhere in the 30s all over the world. It was, 38 in the United States, and I think before that in Canada. But anyway, somewhere around there. They did away with what's called common law, and they instituted the commercial code. And all the commercial code is laws under which we operate in commerce, which happens actually to be maritime commercial law or admiralty commercial law.
Yes.
It all just has to do with banking. There is no other law. There's no criminal code. There's no nothing. Nothing that applies to us. Those policies, laws, statutes, etc., apply only to the people who made them up for the corporation from which they come. So, for example, when a cop, you know, stops you for going through a stop sign, well, show me the law. Well, there can't be a law that says that, unless I agreed to it, of course, and why would anybody do that? I'm not suggesting that people go through stop signs. I'm just using that as an example, that that's a statute that doesn't apply to men and women. It applies to corporate entities and the employees of those corporations.
Yes.
So the only laws that really apply are the codes of this Uniform Commercial Code. So we're all operating in commerce, and that means then that even the courts, into which some people actually believe they have to go, they're not courts of law. They're courts of commerce. So when they drag you in saying something like, well, you know, did you murder this guy? Well, it's not about murder. It's about who has stolen whose credit, and how much does who owe whom in order to balance the books?
Yes.
Simply bookkeeping. It's accounting. It has nothing to do with anything. It's not about theft. It's not about you name it. It's about accounting and how do we balance the books. And that's what the IRS, et cetera, is all about, is they're there to balance the books. And in fact, they're simply not the enemy that we've always thought they were. That's it. Statement in itself, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
yes. Yeah, right. I know. We all hear about the IRS. In fact, just before you called, I was talking to a friend, and she's extremely concerned about, you know, what's the IRS or the court now, because the issue's in court. What are they going to do? And I said, well, you got to remember, the IRS is only perturbed because you didn't file a tax return in order to get your tax returned to you, and now their books are out of balance, and they're blaming you because they don't have the paperwork about how you ran your commercial affairs for that year. Now, if you'll simply let them know how you did that, they'll stop chasing you, and they'll start chasing the ones who actually stole your credit. And in this particular case, the courts stole her credit. So all she has to do is name them, and the IRS will go after the judges.
Hmm.
The way we want it. We're planning on putting the courts out of commission, because that system is actually contrary to what's really going on, which is we are operating in bankruptcy. Every country in the world, when it failed to pay back its debt to the IMF, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, it had to declare bankruptcy, because that's why they collected the gold and silver, is because they ran out of everything.
Is this applicable to all nations across the globe, you're saying?
Yes. Possibly not some tribes in the middle of Africa who still use wampum or whatever,
right.
Not disparaging them. They're actually freer than we are.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Yep.
Any country, and we're all working desperately on this to find the correct forms, and just in case your European listeners are wondering about what forms, I can't say this for certain, but we're beginning to think that people over there, and even Australia, New Zealand, and England, they might just have to get EINs, which are employer identification numbers, and also international tax identification numbers, known as ITINs, with the IRS or with Social Security, because it seems, I can't say this for certain, but it seems as if the IRS is kind of the head guy as far as collection agents go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's heard of the IRS. Not everybody's heard of IR, ATO, or whatever. What's your tax agency called there?
They're called Skatteverket.
Good grief.
Yeah.
No, you mean you don't even have an alphabet agency there? I mean, it's called well, anyway. Name.
I guess it's SV for short or something. I don't know if they punch it down to letters like that, but anyway, there you go. Yeah.
That's terrific. Anyway, but see, I haven't heard of that, but I'm sure you've heard of the IRS.
Yes.
So it's kind of like they're the big guys, because they truly are the best collection agent on the planet. Well, the truth is, they're supposed to be collecting for us. I know this is really, really hard to imagine. But whenever we have put our labor in the form of cash or credit card payments or debit card payments or money orders or certified checks or however it is, that's all from our labor. When we put that into the public, we're actually obstructing the bankruptcy. Because we're all acting in bankruptcy, in other words, the commercial code is based on and due to bankruptcy, we're actually in violation of public policy, and we're doing it wrong. We're not supposed to be paying anything with our labor. We're supposed to be setting off public debt with our signature, which means when somebody presents you with a bill, which, by the way, they tend not to do anymore because that is the easy way to set off public debt, they're supposed to actually, I mean, you go into a store and you buy a lawnmower. Let's pick on Sears. I always pick on Sears. Do you have Sears over there?
No, we don't, fortunately.
Well, okay, Sears is just kind of your classic store for everything, you know.
I know. Yeah, we have similar ones over here. We have that for sure.
Well, I always pick on Sears because for no reason other than I thought it was kind of worldwide almost. But anyway, so you go in there. What they're supposed to do when you take your lawnmower to the counter is they're supposed to write you up a bill that says who you are, who the Sears is, and the cost of the thing, and what it is, what they get. And what we're supposed to be able to do is simply sign for it, thereby claiming it, and giving them access to what's called a treasury account so that we can let the treasury know to offset Sears' debt, which Sears created, by the way. We didn't create it by buying the lawnmower. They created it. They wrote it up as a debt, and all we're doing by signing the bill is saying, I'm authorizing the Treasury to balance your accounts for you, because I now know you have a debt, so you want it balanced. But for us to pay with cash, our labor, believe it or not, is actually increasing the debt. It's doubling it because the amount's the same. Then they give you a receipt which shows you that you've paid. Well, in fact, this did not set off their debt. It increased the problem because we gave them debt notes. Now, this is a huge, long diversion, which I don't really want to get into, but when we labor, we are putting forth our value, and what we're getting in return is debt notes. In other words, those notes operate in debt. It's kind of like picture the level of seawater. Well, there's nothing. We are putting in something positive, so imagine the sea going up, right?
Mm.
But what they're giving us is something negative, so now we're operating below sea level. So it isn't direct compensation. In fact, we are giving away our labor for nothing. What's that called? Slavery. So this is how they've enslaved us, by pretending to give us something of value that isn't of value. And yet, it's true, we can go and get what we want with that. But we're not supposed to. We're not supposed to be handing over that cash. We're supposed to be setting off public debt with our signature and using cash simply for items between you and me. Like if you want a haircut and I say, hey, I can cut your hair, Hendrick. So you say, come on over. And then you say, well, how can I compensate you? And I can say, well, let's see. You could invite me for supper. That would be a nice compensation. Or... you know what? If you don't want to have me to supper, you can just give me some of those notes that you have, that you get from working. And you say, fine. And I take those and I can do what I want with them.
Mm-hmm.
Go someplace and get something else. So but not in the public, just the private. In other words, then I could maybe use my friend's computer for the day, and he says, well, how are you going to compensate me? I say, well, I got these notes that Hendrik gave me. So that's how that's supposed to work. We're not supposed to put those notes into the public. We're supposed to be able to walk into any store. They write us up a bill. We set it off by signing our name, which actually instructs the Treasury to set off their debt. So that then, of course, they can go buy whatever it was I just got from them, like the lawnmower. They go back to their supplier and they get a lawnmower, and they use their account to do that because they've been credited. Now, stop me if it gets too crazy, because I know everything is absolutely the opposite of what we've been thinking.
Yes, yes.
So, I know it's a little dingy, but
it's fine. But let's go back a little bit more and go over it kind of the overview once more here a little bit, because if we think of money right off the bat, obviously it's a means of exchange. It's better in a way, or easier, I should put it, to carry around like, let's say, paper money instead of carrying around coming with your tractor or whatever it is that you want to exchange, right? So in that regard, we can think of money as a kind of a symbolic means of exchange. But what you're talking about right here now is that money has been transformed into something else. It no longer represents the true value of what it's supposed to be. Is that correct?
Yes, it does get us what we want. As you say, we don't want to walk around with a tractor in our pocket, so we carry cash. But that's just between you and me in the private. But when we go to work, it's true they're giving us that, but we were never meant to earn our living anyway. And that gets into a whole ethics issue, where what we're supposed to be doing is whatever our talent is. And we all have a talent, whether we've realized it or not. And so we're supposed to be doing that. I mean, there's carpenters out there. There's people who build lovely furniture. There's people who make lovely music. And so what they ought to be doing is doing that for their fellow man. And when their fellow man says, oh, I just love this piece of music that you played for me, or this desk that you built for me, what can I do for you? And then he says, well, you can do this for me. Or if you can't, or you don't want to, or that's not appropriate right now, tell you what, just give me some of those notes and I can take them someplace and get something from somebody else. In other words, we're not even supposed to have these corporations in our lives. They shouldn't even be existing, but the reason they're existing is essentially to confiscate our labor.
Yes.
And they've enslaved us. Instead of, so we're not working for ourselves anymore and each other, we're working for major corporations, and we're simply cogs in a machine there, and we're not serving anybody by doing it. Because most of the people who work, I mean, you look in any city and you can see these skyscrapers, what are people doing in there? They're not doing anything for their fellow man. They're either doing stockbroking or insurance or banking or something that has involved them, rather enslaved them, in the commercial world. There's no good being done from any of these corporations. Now, yes, these corporations do supply us with the goods that we want. And that's where we say, okay, it was my value that funded the manufacture of this, because I have a birth certificate, and because you knew that, and by that I mean the alleged governments, what they did was they used the birth certificate as a bond in order to create the credit to create or to manufacture whatever the corporations, in other words, create the corporations and manufacture whatever it is they sell, so that we could simply saunter in there anytime we want and say, I'll take that right there.
All right, we're going to be getting back to Mary in a minute, but what I want to do is take a little quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue, okay? So y'all hold on a minute. Let me get a hold to my breaker here. And then we'll be, okay, here it is right here. All right, let me get a hold of my my breaker. Hold on a moment. Everybody, we're back, and we will continue with Miss Mary Croft. Hold on.
There would be no how are you going to pay for it, because I already paid for it. It was my credit, my future labor and productivity, my value backed by the bond that was floated against the birth certificate that actually covered the cost to make the lawnmower that I just came in to buy, or to get, actually.
Mm.
So for them to say you owe us, they say, well, what are you smoking? It's prepaid. I already paid for it. And the example I use in my book is, if you have a friend, let's say that I get confused on that stuff. Okay, you come to me and you say, Mary, I'm just about to open a restaurant, but I need the last $10,000 to do it. Can you lend it to me? I say, sure. And you say, well, I'll pay you back with this much interest, and here's when. And I say, fine, away you go. You finish your restaurant, it's absolutely perfect, but you're not doing quite as well as you planned. So, 6 months later, you come to me and you say, uh-oh, we're just squeaking by, but I can't pay you back the $10,000. And what was the interest that I said I'd pay you? You know what? I just don't see this happening. How can I make this up to you?
Mm-hmm.
I say, well, I don't know. You say, look, tell you what. Anytime you want to come and eat in my restaurant, when the waiter hands you the bill, you simply put your signature on it. I'll know it's you. And then I'll say, oh, thank God, Mary is claiming back some of her credit, some of what I owe her. And that's exactly what the government ought to be doing through its government-owned corporations. Let's go back to the lawnmower. We go in. When Sears sees my signature on their bill, they should be saying, oh, Mary's claiming back the credit that we took from her in order to make the lawnmower in the first place.
But then you're
even exchange.
But then you're talking about that you as a human being, when you come into or enter into this world, that you have a right, so to speak, to sustain yourself as a human being, right? Because there have to be some kind of foundation, so to speak, on this, because what you're talking about, I mean, you were obviously talking about like things like slavery before. I mean, I guess we have to as well also kind of go back into history and just look upon how one human being enslaves another, and that's kind of the initiatory step towards this kind of which at this point is an international system of slavery and control, basically, that we're looking at, you know?
Mm-hmm. So is your question, how all of a sudden do I get this credit?
Well, my question is, I guess, how, just to clarify for our listeners, when you say that, when you go into the store and to get that lawnmower, that actually already is prepaid. There is that you actually have paid for it, or you have a right to take it as yours. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. And are you asking why?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's do it again. Only those with birth certificates can do that, because what happened in the 30s was mothers were obliged to register their baby's birth, because then what the feds, the government, the alleged government, said was, we now know of this other child that's been born, and it's been registered. It's now a corporation, because the name on the birth certificate certainly isn't the name of any baby.
And we need to go through that later, but yeah, continue your story, yes.
So what they've done is, well, they've just simply created, they've registered a name for a corporation, that's all. And so then they send us the birth certificate essentially saying, this is your ticket. This is what you can use to prove that you have unlimited credit from the Treasury. And the reason is because over your lifetime, we intend that you will pay us way more than we will ever pay you. So we're making it unlimited because we need your value in order to pay off the national debt, which of course doesn't really exist, but the concept is that if indeed the World Bank lent governments money, then it has to pay it back with interest. The interest, of course, doesn't exist. That's another subject. But so essentially what they said is, throughout your life, you'll pay enough in fines and taxes and fees and application and you name it, that we will collect enough of your dollars in order essentially to enslave you. You will be slave laboring. We will get so much more value from your work, and that's why women apparently don't get quite as much credit as men, but that's questionable. But anyway, so they're anticipating getting way more from us. So what harm does it do them to say, you've got unlimited credit? The trick was they didn't tell us that we had unlimited credit. So here we go blithely along slave laboring, due to this alleged national debt. We don't owe anybody anything, and they're taking our value, where the remedy actually has been written into, well, here it's the Bills of Exchange Act, but the remedy has been written in, and the remedy is, because we're using your credit, unbeknownst to you, we have to have a remedy, because otherwise it would be unlawful. And we'd be in deep trouble. So we're going to create a remedy, but we're not going to tell you. But the remedy is, everything you could ever need or want is prepaid, because we used your credit to create the corporation, and we used your credit to manufacture the goods that you'll want. All you really have to do is sign for them, because we're getting way more from you by slave laboring in a bloody insurance company. And who's that work for? That's for the bank.
So
many of those downtown buildings are strictly make-work projects in order to pay off the national debt to the World Bank.
Yes.
Utter insanity.
So what you're saying here is that on the surface, so to speak, this is what if you sit down, study the system, right, and learn all the terms and all the linguistics and all the tricks, as it were, of the system, you discover that this is the reality of it. And if you can understand that, are you saying then that there is a way that you actually can do by law this to function, you know, in your life? Can you go into a store and actually just, you know, make this happen, so to speak, get that lawnmower?
You can, but you got to remember that the employees of the store won't know what in hell you're talking about, right?
Right, right.
So why get into a dissertation? That's not our job to educate. We want to stand there and say, well, look, why don't you know that we have this blah, 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 unlimited credit, and this is mine, and all I have to do is sign it, and you take it to your to your head office and balance the books on it, blah, blah, blah. No, we're not going to bother with that. So what we're going to do is go along with them and say, here, what do you want? You want my cash? Okay, here. Now what we do is we, at the same time, this is now I'm going to use U.S. terms only because that's sort of the biggest sort of, and I know the form names.
Yes.
But so what we do is we hand them a copy of what's called a 1099 OID, and you don't need to know that other than what it does is it states who is issuing the credit. It's essentially stating that I am the source of the credit, not Sears.
Mm-hmm.
So, because if we just hand them our cash and we don't say who it is, they'll say that they're the source of the credit, and then they call it gets a little technical here, but they call it abandoned funds, and then the IRS won't tax them. They'll come back and tax us in order to balance its books. But that's a bit complicated. So here's the drift. So we give them certain forms. One of them is this OID, and another one is what's it called? 1099, or pardon me, a 1040V, which is a voucher, and by the definition of voucher is a payment. And so all that means, or actually it's an authorization of payment. So then you send that to the Treasury, and you give these people a copy so that they know what you're up to. You get their tax identification number, and the Treasury sets off their debt for them. And then, of course, they've got, not only do they have it set off by the Treasury, they've still got our cash, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they say, oh, now we got this cash. Well, what the IRS will do is simply go back to the company and say, okay, your debt's been set off to you, and we now know that you have somebody's cash that you're not supposed to have, so give it back, and we'll get it back for the one who bought the goods.
Mm.
So essentially, the purpose of the IRS is actually to track down what we have put into the public and get it back for us.
Hmm.
But we have to be very careful to give them the correct forms in order to do that. So
okay.
It really is a case of, going into the store and setting off the debt. But because nobody knows that, because they've been so programmed in school that they have to pay for everything, they presume that we have to pay for everything.
Well,
and try walking out of a store without paying for something.
Yeah, there we go.
So if you give them whatever it is they want, then you can just go back and say, look, I'll give you this, but I'll get it back from you later. Not to worry. This is not my job to educate you on commerce.
Right, right. But so what we kind of get back to here then is the fact that it doesn't feel like the system has been set up in order to operate, in this case, at least not for the, for the guy or gal walking down the street, so to speak. This is the system feels like it is actually designed in order to deceive us, and this gets us into the other aspect that you were talking about, that this has to do with indoctrination and that everyone just goes along what their parents taught them or whatnot. But I mean, even if we were to come up to a point where we discover this and we learn how the system works, then it feels like they would actually just change the system into something else in order to sustain the control over us, if you know where I'm going with this, so to speak. Do you follow me?
I do. Now, and this is the problem we've been having for so long, up until recently, and that is... that... what we have been doing, like let's go back to Sears and the lawnmower, and if they did it properly, and I know they're not, but we'll get to that, they would hand me a bill, and I would sign it. That is the proper way to do it. But the fact that they're not, yes, and it's more insidious than all that. I mean, what we've been doing with those bills or receipts, like let's just say the electric bill. So we write on it, accepted for value, which means I accept your charge. No skin off my nose. I accept what you're saying. You're saying I owe you $100. That's okay. I'll accept it. I'll sign it. And I'll give it back to you. Now, what's been happening? Here's where we went wrong. What's been happening is they've realized that that is credit, and they've been stealing it from us. And we haven't had any recourse to go back in and say, hey, you stole my credit. And, of course, then you get another bill from the electric company saying you didn't pay us. And we're saying, oh, yes, I did. I accepted your bill, and I even gave you my signature, which means you should have gotten paid. But we weren't really clear on who was doing the set-off. So what was happening is we were giving them our credit, and they were winning, and we had no way to say, hey, wait a minute. So that's why what we're doing now is saying, yep, I accept your charge. Here's my signature, and here's the IRS forms so that you know that I'm going to go tell the IRS that I paid you with my signature. I'm going to send this document to the Treasury so that the Treasury will set off your debt, and I'm going to let the IRS know that I've done this. Now do you want to try stealing my credit? No, I didn't think so. And that's what's stopping it. Now, if for some reason they still think they can do this, what we're doing is, and I don't speak for myself, I have yet to do this, but people are filing commercial liens against these corporations who are stealing our credit and not essentially balancing their books. They're still coming back after us for the credit. And by the way, the best way to access this Treasury account is via what we call here in the provinces the social insurance number, and what they call in the states the social security number. And so I don't know what your socialist number is called over there. But that's the number that we sign with. In other words, when we write on a bill, accepted for value, and then you sign it, and then you put that number and you send it to the Treasury says, okay, this is a real account. I can see that the name and the number match. So that's a real account. So we'll go into this unlimited credit account and offset the public debt for that corporation. Or the electric bill or whatever it is.
Yes.
And so that's how they know. So in a sense, that social, what we call a social insurance number, truly is an insurance policy.
Think if I
ran into the back of you with my car, you'd want to know my insurance policy number, right?
Yes.
Well, of course, my question has always been, why do we need separate auto insurance when we already have a public hazard social insurance number? So all I really need to give you is that government number, and then you should be able to access my unlimited credit from the Treasury account and get your car handled. So they're not honoring that social insurance number would be the same as your getting my insurance policy number from me after I smacked up your car, and you're going to the insurance company and saying, oh, well, Mary crashed into my car. Here's the number. Here's my claim. Pay me. And the insurance company saying, no. Then what would you do? You'd come back to me, and you would say, pay me. And I'd say, I already told you who's going to pay you. I gave you the number. I gave you the company. I gave you everything you need. Are you trying to tell me that my insurance company didn't pay your claim? And you're saying, yes. And so now what do I have to do? I have to go after the insurance company, right?
Mm.
So that's kind of what's happening, let's just say, with a traffic ticket. You get a traffic ticket, and you accept it, and you sign it, and you put your social insurance number on it, your whatever your socialist number is, and then what happens is the traffic guy or the court, the cops, they say, you didn't pay. And then, so our recourse is to say, well, I gave you the number of the insurance policy. Did you contact them? Are you saying that you didn't do that?
Yeah.
Or are you saying that they declined to pay you? Well, chances are the insurance company didn't decline. It's more likely that you did not go to the insurance company because you're hoping to soak me.
Hmm.
So if you can use that as an analogy, you can see how absurd it is.
Yes.
So it'd be the same as you're calling me saying, well, your insurance company wouldn't pay, so now I'm coming after you. You think I'm going to pay you? No. Hey, your problem is with the insurance company. My premiums are paid. Now you've got a problem. So that's what we have to say to the courts is, did you access my Treasury account? Well, they're not going to say no, but they will continue to come after us. And, of course, our point is why are you bothering me? I gave you the number.
Hmm.
I told you how to get paid.
Mm, yeah.
So too many people are forking over their labor when, in fact, they don't have to. They simply have to say, hey, I gave you the number of the account. Did you go to the Treasury? But, see, the real drift is not that they actually have to go to the Treasury, and this why I'm talking about this latest information. What we have to do is authorize the Treasury to offset their account, to set off their debt for them. So we were actually missing a very valuable step. We were sort of saying, here's my signature in my account, way you go. And now we're saying, no, they'll steal it and still come back on us. Hmm. Now we're saying, uh-huh, give me your tax ID number. Here's the forms. I'm sending the forms to the IRS. I'm going to authorize the Treasury to pay you, and the IRS is going to know that I paid you, and they're going to come back after you for it. Kind of like, are you sure you want to do this?
Hmm. And you are looking into a way to do this then, and a consequence of this. I mean, what would that be if let's say that everyone did this? Would this imply that the system actually would kind of self implode on itself, or the once the cat is out of the bag, so to speak, and everyone knows this, the system wouldn't be able to sustain itself anymore? What do you think?
It would start to act smoothly. And by the way, and I write this in my book too. I don't know if you're familiar with the Mayan calendar, but it's quite fascinating.
Yes.
Think it had something to do with dates. It doesn't, or that it measured time. It doesn't. It measures creation. But this year, 2008, is what they call the fifth night. And the fifth night is the end of manufactured lack, which, boy, what a tip-off that is. I could never figure that out 5 years ago. I thought, I wonder what that's going to look like.
Yep.
Now we know what it's going to look like. People are going to start obeying commercial code because we're going to stick them to it. So in other words, when you say what's going to happen, it'll start running smoothly. There won't be people with no money and losing their houses because we now know how to essentially pay off the banks by telling them, hey, you stole my credit, you owe me, not the other way around.
Wait a minute, Mary, this is very interesting. So what you're saying here is that the system then would actually work in a more, in a more balanced and harmonious, so to speak, way if this were truly followed to the standards that it was initially set up to be. Is that correct?
What I wrote in my book is that we live in a system that was designed not to work, and that's actually not true, if I could go back and rewrite it. Right? we actually live within a system that was designed to work. Everything is in place for this to work properly. What's happened is we've gotten some rogue agents in there, mostly because they've been so programmed and brainwashed that they fell for the party line, which was, everybody has to earn his living and pay his own way, and it simply isn't true. We're the ones who own the planet, so to speak. You can't own a planet, but
sure.
We're the ones in charge. And these rubby little bankers just simply had a scathingly brilliant idea on how to enslave the people of the planet.
So this is a way for them, for those who set up the banks and so forth, this is a way for them to kind of hijack, if you will, an existing system applying a different layer, so to speak, on top of that system that was set up to begin with, and in order when they do that, I should say, they manage to get rich themselves of the system and consequently also maintain or gain, I guess, control over nations, I guess we can say at this point, right?
Yes. And the reason is, I spell this out in my most recent article, which is called The Two Accounting Systems. It's kind of weird, and it has to do with the fact that cash is debt, but corporations see it as credit. But in fact, it doubles the debt. But keep in mind, the board of directors want the cash because they use cash the same way we do. So it's kind of like the corporation is what twists things. If you and I pay our electric bill to ABC Electric and we pay in cash, what we've actually done is give ABC more debt. Instead of paying off the debt that they created, like the bill that we get,
yes,
we've actually doubled the debt. But because they perceive, it's not what the corporation wants, is double the debt. The corporation doesn't want to double debt. But keep in mind, corporations can't show a profit. So where does that cash go? It goes to the corporate board members. Because keep in mind, a corporation is a fiction.
Yes.
And so it doesn't have any feelings either way. But it doesn't set off the debt. When we pay our electric bill, it actually makes the situation worse.
Hmm.
So what happens is board members who like cash just as much as we do, they take the cash and create double the debt. Well, what does double the debt do? It creates what's called the national debt. And that's the old, Americans are in so much debt.
Yes.
Well, no, we're not. The corporations are in debt.
Hmm.
Because that's how they want it, because they want us to continue to fork over our cash to them. Because they can use cash, the people, not the corporation.
Sure.
It's kind of a switch. Like, corporations need credit, not debt.
Exactly, and the people who run them
want debt, not credit.
And it's a kind of, the system at this point, or the way the system or the structure is being used, is that it's going to self-implode or pop like a bubble sometime here, it feels like, because in a way then this means that they have to, gain more and more and more and more debt, basically, in order to pay the previous debt. But this is going to, again, bring in more debt. So it's gonna pop, right? The bubble's going to pop.
Well, not if we call their bluff, which is what I think is going to happen. I don't know if you're familiar with George Green.
Yes, I've heard of him, yes.
Have you? Yeah. Now, he says watch out for September 30th because that's the U.S. fiscal year. By that, I mean the fiscal year of the corporation called the United States government. Keep in mind, it's not a government. It's a corporation called that. So what he's saying is watch out. And I say, well, we got a little under 60 days to call their bluff and say there is no national debt. All you're saying is that every time we've given you cash, of course, we can't pay the interest because the interest doesn't exist, right? If they only create so much cash and they want interest on it, well, how can you pay something that isn't there, right?
Yes.
And if, just in case you don't grasp that, that would be the same as my borrowing your car with a full tank of gas and bringing you back more car than I borrowed. It's an impossibility.
Right.
So when banks lend you money and want interest back, well, where's the interest?
Yes.
unless they create it, and they're not going to do that without charging you interest, right?
Right.
So it's just this laughable circumstance. And I contend that if we can get enough people, especially those who think they're about to lose their houses with foreclosure, if we can get through to these people and say, you don't owe the bank owes you. They've been using your credit for however many years, and they've never paid any tax on it. So they owe us. So then, you know, we sick the IRS on them and say, go in and get my credit for me. Because the promissory note that most people use to get the loan for the house was the payment for the house right up front, right in the first place. Why? Because you put your signature onto a piece of paper. And remember, the signature is worth, well, billions. It's unlimited credit. So they took that promissory note and they converted it. And they've been selling it and using it. So the bank's gotten paid who knows how many times. And they also want us to pay every month?
Yes.
So people have been going back in and getting not only the value of the note, but also the monthly payments. Imagine having everything you've ever put into your house come back to you in the form of a check from the tax agent. It's fabulous. Anyway, and of course, yeah, right. All you're looking for is an updated, well, we won't go there. But anyway, so will the system implode? Well, we could say yes, and that's good news, or we could say no, it'll simply start to operate the way it's supposed to. But, you know, just like a cornered dog, they may not go down nicely.
Right,
right. They may fight and to the bitter end, even though they know they're losing, and it may get a little bit uncomfortable, and there may be some casualties. But I am sticking to an intention that is, once enough of us catch on, they simply won't have an option and they'll have to start behaving themselves. And people who are in the positions of enforcing, for example, the police or the banker who says, you overdrafted your account, so we're going to charge you $30 on top of that, they're going to catch on that they've been duped and that they are in fact guilty of wronging their brothers. And if they think that the banks aren't going to do the same things to them as they've done to us, they need to think again. So, you know, cops who are locking people up for ridiculous reasons, they got to get that what goes around comes around, and they're going to get locked up when their usefulness has been fulfilled. Pardon me. Yeah, usefulness has been fulfilled.
Right.
They're simply going to say, thanks, Buster, now you're up. People have to back out of unethical behavior, and the whole issue is about ethics.
Yes, yes, I totally agree, and that's a very, positive note as well in regards to that. There's so much doom and gloom, so to speak, right now in regards to the financial system, that everything is going to collapse and so forth. But it's more how we utilize the system and use it, because the structure, as you say, kind of is there in place. We just have to operate it in the correct way in order to make it work, basically. But Mary, let's do like this. Let's take a short break right here and continue talking more about this in our members section. I want to definitely go into a little bit more about kind of the idea of a natural person versus an artificial person. We haven't really kind of talked about the idea of the birth certificates and how actually a person is turned into a corporation at birth and so forth. There's many things we can talk about also in regards to your name when it is in the capital letters, what that implies and so forth. There's much more coming up here. But before we finish this segment off, tell us a little bit about your website and how people can find a copy of the book that we've been mainly talking about here today, Mary.
Okay, I don't have a website.
You don't?
No, the Natural Person website is not mine.
Uh-huh, really?
It's just a friend who posted my book on his website. And although I love him like crazy, I have to tell you, I have a real problem with the concept of natural person, because the word person itself means legal fiction or corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So an artificial person is an artificial corporation.
Right.
Natural person is a natural corporation or legal fiction.
Mm.
So the distinction is not between men and women and corporations. The distinction is the uppercase name is what is commonly known as a natural person, but it still doesn't have anything to do with men and women. An artificial corporation is something like Sears.
Right.
Or ABC Electric. That's an artificial corporation, meaning that there is no life attached to it. It's complete fiction. A natural person is still a corporation, a legal fiction, but it's connected to a real man or woman. But the uppercase name we've kind of let go as far as significance goes, because when we raised so much hell about it, oh, who knows how long ago, we started noticing that they try and bluff it. For example, the names on birth certificates now, I think, are showing up as capitalized. Or, for example, a court order might have a normal first and second name and the last name in uppercase. In other words, they're trying to do everything to get around the fact that they're not, nor can they lawfully write to a real man or woman. They cannot address us. They have no right. They don't mean us anyway. They mean the legal fiction, because we're the authorized representative and we can set off any debts or alleged crimes that the legal fiction may have performed. But that's the only way we're connected with it, is that we get to say, oh, I see you've charged this corporation, of which I am the authorized representative. So, okay, how much is it you need? I'll put my signature to it. I'll have the Treasury set off your, balance your books for you. So, but when they say they want a legal fiction in court, well, what's that all about? Legal fiction's already in court. They've got the name right there. So the natural person really is just the legal fiction that exists along with an authorized representative. But keep in mind that all artificial persons or corporations also have authorized representatives, and they're attorneys and CEOs and presidents and things like that. They're mm-hmm. the authorized. You know, probably like Sam Smith might be the CEO of Sears, and he can sign for Sears because he's the authorized representative. Well, we're the same. The only distinction is that Sears is an artificial corporation, and The other name, of which I'm the authorized representative, happens to be a natural person. But it's all still legal fiction.
All right. Keep in mind that we will be back at a later date with some more Mary Croft. And but right now, we're going to take a little quick break. And when we come back, we're going to go into to this 1099C and the rest of this stuff. But y'all hold on a minute, and we'll be right back. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, everybody, we're back. And y'all just hold your hat for a minute. We're going to get down into this 1099C. And we're also going to go back over and read some more information onto the record about these bonds. So y'all just hold on a minute. We will be right back, okay?
Hi, I'm Tahaka. By January the 26th or 28th, 2022, the U.S. government corporation will begin calling for full payment of student loan debt again. The pause will be over. Don't wait until the last minute. Get out of debt now. You have plenty of time now. Go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. It's just like someone filing bankruptcy. After you have filed and the deadline arrives, you still owe the debt. It's a scam. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Contact me, Tahaka, for what you need to solve the problem. Peace. Don't wait. Act now.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I wanted to make this quick video real quick about 1099 cancellation of debt forms that some of you may be getting in. This is really jumping off real big right now because a lot of people probably had cancellation of debt either from student loans or credit card companies where the company just said, we're going to, you know, what I think people get confused about is they're like, if they wrote off the debt, how are they able to come after me for it if they wrote it off? They're thinking that it was canceled, and that's what I've been trying to get across to people. Just because a company writes off a debt or charges it off, that's nothing but a legal technicality that all companies have to do for loans that are out there because they have investors that they have to do, they have to report to, and they have to say what happened with these loans, and they give, it's usually a 6-month period before they have to write it off, and then when they redo the reporting, they're letting people, their investors know that these are the debts that did not go through, that are not going to be going through. They can sell that debt to a debt collection company. They can still collect the debt. Now, the only time that they can't collect the debt is if they actually write it off as a cancellation of debt, and that's when they report to the federal government using a form 1099-C stating that they have forgiven the debt. But now this is where it's on the flip side. What happens to you if you find yourself receiving one of these forms in the mail is that the IRS is going to consider that income. So let's just say, for instance, you had a $10,000 credit card balance and you got the credit card company decided to cancel that debt. They're going to send this form to you, and they're also going to send it to the federal government, and the federal government is going to wait and see what you're going to do when you file your taxes. If you do not include a copy of this, or you do not state it that you had a cancellation of debt and add that amount to your income, you're going to get automatically triggered for an audit. And but a lot of people are confused about that because they're like, I didn't get the money because they, it was on the credit card and I bought stuff with it. That's where you need to put your plus and your 1 + 1 = 2 thinking together. You use the credit card to buy things that you wanted. And so that means that even though you didn't directly get the money, you indirectly were able to use the money, and that's why the credit card company can write that off. Now, coming to my mind right now, some things that you need to be careful of when dealing with this is, number one, be careful of them blowing up the amount of the cancellation of debt. You want to make sure that the amount that is canceled was the actual amount that you owed. Because let's just say, for instance, they waited for 2 or 3 years, and then they let that balloon up a 10,000 $1,000 credit card debt up to $20,000, they send you a $20,000 cancellation of debt form, that you didn't get $20,000 worth of income, so you would need to make sure that this is correct. So even if they did do that and you remember it being something different, you need to let the IRS know that. They're going to probably still try to audit you over it, but you need to let them know right away that you did not receive $20,000, that you did not have a balance of $20,000, and that this cancellation of debt form that they sent you is inaccurate, and they will follow back up with that company and make sure that they make the appropriate changes. You also need to write a letter and get it certified and send that to the company and tell them that you did not borrow that amount of money and that you do not think that that's an accurate amount on there, and let them know that you have notified the IRS that they have that they've turned in an inaccurate cancellation of debt form to them. Now, something else that I put on here is that you, if you do get this notice, cancellation of debt, you are never obligated to pay the original creditor any money. Now, what I've been seeing happen is that debt collection companies have taken that money, have purchased those old debts, and they're going after people that don't know their rights. If you ever receive something that you believe, that you know was canceled from the previous holder of the debt or a previous creditor, you need to do what's called a validation. You validate the debt. You need to make sure that it wasn't canceled. When you do a validation, you want to ask those questions, because they're not going to answer any questions that they don't want to answer. They're only going to answer what you put in that letter. So you want to ask them to make sure that this debt was not canceled. You want to find out if they own the debt, or did they are they just collecting it for the original creditor. All of these things, there's a whole bunch of things that you need to ask for. Things like, if they purchased a debt, then you want to ask for all of your credit card charges, your signatures, everything to prove that they, number one, have purchased a debt and have legal authorization to collect the debt. And then you want to ask them for the documentation on when they purchased the debt. And they will give that to you if you ask the questions the right way. But if you don't do that, and then you end up making one payment to a debt that has been canceled, you can technically be legally binded to that new contract, even though that contract would not be void. The only way you'd be able to void out that contract is to take them to court, because that you, when you've made that payment, even if it was canceled out debt, you've actually initiated a new contract with that collector, even though it's 100% illegal for them to do that. But what are you going to do? Are you going to pay the money to take them to court and open this whole thing back up? Some people get afraid. Some people are scared. They don't know their rights, so they just end up paying the money. Now, if for some reason, and I got, and I'm making this video in response to a YouTube question that came about, and some questions that were on Facebook. If you happen to pay that debt, even though you had the cancellation of debt, and you know the IRS is going to consider that is income, what you need to do is, whoever you paid the debt to, you need to request a W-9 form from them. So if it was a collection agency that you paid the money to, request a W-9 form from them as proof that you paid them the money. I'm going to tell you the reason why you need to do that and why your receipt will not work for that. It will work, but it's going to work later. You need to do this so you can head off what the IRS is going to try to do. They work by having these types of documents. That W-9 form looks similar to this, but it says W-9, and it's going to have the company's information, and it's going to, and then you'll be able to state that you sent them a payment. You're going to get their information, so you can then fill out a form back to them showing that you have a 1099, which is there's a 1099 form. There's different ones, but you need to pick the one that you've paid someone money, and it's, as long as it's over $600 in a year, you can fill out that form. So you get the W-9 form, which will have their information, their tax ID number. Then you're going to, on a 1099 form, for independent contractors, or that you paid a non-employee money, you're going to fill out that form with their information, your information, that you what for whatever amount that you paid them. And that way it'll block the IRS from thinking that you had that extra income. And then the next step would be to take them to court, or you can try to get everything worked out without going to court by providing the debt collection company the information about the cancellation of debt from the original creditor, and that you believe that you were defrauded by them and that you should not have had to pay that collection, that at the time you did not understand, and that you would like to have all of the monies refunded in a timely manner that you paid on the cancellation of debt collection that they were on the debt that was canceled, but when they brought it to you, you didn't understand your rights and that you didn't know that you didn't have to pay that debt legally. So if you need any assistance, or you can always go to our website, thecreditrepairshop.com. We have a blog on there.
Okay. Let's get deeper into this 1099-C. So y'all hold on a moment.
Hey, what's up, my YouTube fam? I'm back. This is Larry with Invest Your Build Your Credit and Wealth. Today, we're going to have a very good class. We're going to be talking about a 1099-C. We're going to be talking about the myth. We're going to be talking about the misinformation that's put out there about a 1099-C. We're going to be talking about what does the court say about a 1099-C. We're going to explain to you what is it, what is a 1099-C, why is it even processed, why did the IRS process there? How does that affect you? We're going to just kind of cover everything. The one thing about me doing credit repair is I like to go back a lot of times, and what does the court say about certain things? Because that is your leverage. If the court had came out and made a judgment about a certain thing that a creditor and creditor cannot do, that's your leverage to put that, to change the playing field, to make it better for you to get something removed and fixed. You know, we gotta, you know, I keep it real with you on this credit channel. You know, a lot of people that do this are in this industry, and I'll be the first one to tell them, quit making up tricks and gimmicks that don't always work, and then charge people for it, and then our consumers don't get what they're supposed to get out of it. Like, that's not what it's all about for me. It's all about, I'm going to tell you the truth about it. I'm going to tell you what you have to do. I'm going to tell you, say you're going to have to settle this debt. It's reporting correctly on your credit report. Unless you can find something that says that it's inaccurate or they're doing something that's illegal, it's going to be on there, right? If it haven't reached the statutory limitations, all that type of stuff, that's where this channel is all about. It's all about bringing you the real deal about credit and not about just trying to get you into the door and feed you something, you don't get the results that you got to get. So I'm gonna give you the truth about 1099-Cs today. Today is the truth day about 1099-Cs. And we're going to talk about some strategies that may work when trying to get a charge off or 1099-C, things you do and don't want to do. So you know the deal. That's how we bring it on this channel. And, you know, but next, I just want to say I appreciate all my new subscribers. Hey, do me a favor. Share the channel, right? You know, like the channel. You know, continue to say, hey, Larry, I appreciate you being honest about credit. And we need to get more honesty out there to all the people about credit. So share my channel. If you know somebody got some credit issues, share my channel. You know, yes, I do have a master to distribute package. I'm always adding things to it, and I have people that purchase this package all the time, and I appreciate and thank you everybody that purchased this package. You know, I'm here to help you. I'm not here to feed you a bunch of stuff and get you in the door to get you to pay me all this crazy amount of money. That's not what I'm about. I'm blessed. Thank the Lord and Savior that I'm a blessed man, and I'm able to come out and give you the real deal. You know what I'm saying? So that's what it's all about. Yes, I could help you repair your credit. Yes, I will give you a free credit analysis and go over the credit with you. Take the time. You can read out, leave a comment. What if I actually answer the phone? Will he actually reach out to you and talk to you? Ask the questions and you can get your own feedback. The truth is in the pudding, as they say. So I am truly here to help you. I've been in your shoes. I know how it's changed my life when I understood credit, and I promise you it changed my life. And me and my wife, we're going to do another. We did a video when I first started. We're going to do a follow-up video together that how it has changed our lives when I understood credit and all that. And understanding credit got me into investing. And that's it became like a tree, and then that knowledge continued to grow. It just changed my financial path. It wasn't about the amount of money that we was making, because my wife's a nurse, I'm an operational manager, we always make good money. But it ain't about how much you make, it's about what you do, what you make, and understand how to grow your wealth, right? So that's what it's all about. Enough of that. Thank you for all my new subscribers. You know the deal, like, subscribe, and share. And I appreciate y'all. So let's get into this video. We're going to talk about a 1099-C. If you see me look down, it's because I got a lot of information. I've been doing a lot of research on this because I wanted to bring you the truth and not just cover some BS and leave you hanging. So we're going to talk about what is a 1099-C. So first of all, a 1099-C is when a creditor has deemed this debt or this account irrecoverable, and they're going to stop collection activities. So they're trying to reduce their tax burden because that is lost income. So the IRS say you are required, listen what I'm telling you, required to submit a 1099-C, right? And that reduces their tax burden. When they get that 1099 IRS, they are required to send you that 1099-C, because the IRS has on record that they took a tax, they reduced their tax burden, which says because you failed on a debt, that now that tax burden, you reduced it. So now the consumer, we know that consumer had reduced their tax, did not pay this debt. And because they did not pay the debt, now the IRS looks at that is your income. Now you put that back into your income. Now they're going to tax your income on that debt. So if you have a $10,000 debt, right, hypothetically, and they wrote that whole $10,000 off, what the IRS is saying that you put that money back into your income, so now we're going to tax that $10,000 back into your income. In a nutshell, that's what it's all about. Now, let's talk about, and it goes the other way. If you settle, and we're going to talk about the differences between if they wrote off the whole debt versus you settled the debt. So the other thing is, okay, maybe you called the creditor. Hey, I want to settle this debt. And you owe $10,000, but you settled for $2,000, which left a remaining balance of $8,000. They still have to issue that 1099-C. They're going to send you a 1099-C for the $8,000. You're going to have to add that into your income and be taxed. It could raise your taxes burden. It may not, depending on how you fall in the tax bracket. So that's in a nutshell what a 1099, but we're going to get a little deeper. First, I'm going to read something to you that talked about what the Internal Revenue Service says about a 1099-C. And this is what it says. It says a creditor sometimes write off debt due to several reasons, like long-time payment, default, or bankruptcy. In such cases, the creditor stops its collection efforts, declare that the debt is irrecoverable, and report it to the IRS as lost income. Listen to that and remember that, lost income, to reduce their tax burden. The creditor will report the amount as lost income to the IRS via a 1099-C during the year the write-off was put in place, right? Now, that's what that 1099-C is all about. That's how the IRS looks at it. Now, let's get a little deeper. It says, now, this is what I tell you, and I'm be upfront with you. You should always try to settle and get a 1099-C, and I'll explain that a little bit later in this video. Why? Because of this. This depends on how the debt has been forgiven. Now, it's all about making sure the creditor has forgiven that debt. What a lot of people make mistakes, and they're not telling you, is that if a creditor, right, I'm going to read this to you, if a creditor writes off an entire debt, it does not mean that they have to stop collection activities. And I can tell you, this is what the court says, right? In certain districts, the court has said that just because, in their court cases, and I'll give you some, you can look them up, and this is always in my dispute package if you don't believe me, and this information is in STCNW, Attorneys at Law. They wrote up this thing about the issuance of a 1099-C in the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And I'm going to read some things off of there. So it's all about making sure they forgive, because once they've forgiven the debt, now they no longer can go after you for the debt. Sometimes people get confused on does a 1099-C mean that I no longer owe the debt that they've forgiven? Does not mean that unless you have settled the debt and they forgave the debt. Remember that. This depends, and I want to read something to you. This depends on how the debt was forgiven. I'll give you an example. If you made a settlement with your credit card company, that means you made a deal with them to pay a percentage of what you owe. Remember that. You made a deal. And then that can be in a lump sum on installment payment. So you made a deal with, so once you made that deal, like, I will pay a percentage of what I owe, and then if you would please issue me that 1099-C and I'm going to write it off. Again, we're going to talk about some strategies on that. So that is the main thing you need to understand, the difference. If they wrote off the entire amount, say you owe $10,000, and then they reduced their tax burden with the IRS and gave a 1099-C, and then they turned around and issued you that 1099 for $10,000, that does not mean that they have to stop collection activities against you, right? This is where it gets really good, right? And this is why you want to settle versus letting them write it off. Like, you want to hit it in the head. We have to get away from allowing a debt to get so far that they sell it to a collection agency. We want to get past that. We want to get it, hit it at the head, chop the head off, right? So, and I'm explaining to you why. So those are some of the main things. So I want to read something to you too, and this is out of the this SWCNW Attorneys at Law wrote up about the insurance of a 1099-C and the Fair Credit Reporting Act, right? And this is important. These are the things that you need to understand when it comes to that. Don't let people tell you, just get you a 1099-C and it's going to come off. It could possibly, but it's how you address that. So I want to read something to you, and this is from the article that these attorney at law wrote up. The insurance of a 1099-C and the Fair Credit Reporting Act, that's the title. There is no bright line rule regarding what should be reported on a consumer's fair credit reporting when a 1099 is issued. Although the IRS has provided some guidance in various information letters, federal and state courts have interpreted the IRS guidelines in different ways. Nationwide, court differs as whether an issuing of a 1099-C extinguishes a debt and prohibits a creditor from pursuing collections or reporting the debt. While it appears that the district and court circuits are holding that the existence of a 1099-C form does not alone operate to distinguish a debt, some courts of limited jurisdictions have held that it is inequitable, meaning unfair, to allow a creditor to belatedly enforce the alleged debt after they received a tax benefit of the charge off. So that's what the court says.
Right.
So there is no line that says if you get a 1099-C, it automatically comes off. Right. But some courts have, in some jurisdictions, just said, hey, it's unfair. How can you take a tax credit or reduce your tax burden and then still go after the consumer for the debt or report the debt after you just got a benefit from the debt, right? So this is what we're going to talk about a little later on, some strategies that you need to do. If you want to know more about a 1099-C, you need to just look up in the IRS in section 1-6050P, right? You can look it up, and it has a lot of information in there. Now, when does what triggers a 1099-C? A 1099-C is issued when an indebtedness of a person of at least $600 or more. For example, you have that $10,000 debt. You settle for $1,000. That's $9,000. It's going to trigger a 1099-C. But say you have a debt that's $1,000, you paid $500. That does not trigger that 1099-C because it has to be $600 or more, right? So it doesn't trigger that. So it has to be at least $600 or more to trigger a 1099-C, right? So that is what is so important. That's the trigger point. Now, I want to read something. I want to read something else to you, right? The court also says this. Just because, let me get down and read this all the way at the bottom, because I want to just get down to the conclusion, and we're going to talk about some strategies and what I would do and what I have done with a Capital One, and that I had a car that blew the engine on my way to the racetrack. I mean, I love fast cars, building cars. I like doing all that stuff. So, but anyway, on my way to the racetrack, blew the engine, owed $19,000 on this Dodge Charger. Eventually, I settled with them for $2,750. Which reduced my tax burden, which increased my tax burden, and they wrote me a 1099-C. Capital One removed that after I settled and removed that off my credit report. It is no longer on my credit report, right? So there are ways to get it off, and I'm going to tell you how you should address it when dealing with the original creditor and a 1099-C. So let me get down to the bottom. As such, there is no bright line rule regarding whether an issue of 1099-C discharge an indebtedness. Furthermore, as this is still a developing area of law, there are no cases to date that explicitly state what should be reported on a consumer's credit report when a 1099-C is issued, or rather a satisfaction of judgment must be filed after the issuance of a 1099-C. So, but this is the thing, the difference. You need to, this is the strategy that I would tell you, and I just want to cut through all the chase, right? One thing you have to understand, and let me talk about some things that are illegal. I'm sorry, because I'm moving fast and I'm skipping some things. A collection company cannot issue you a 1099-C. For one, they're not the original creditor. They're not writing that off on their taxes. So if a creditor sends you a 1099-C, then you should be contacting the Federal Trade Commission about that, and you need to be contacting your state attorney general. They cannot do that. The next thing you need to understand is that a original creditor must file and is required to file a 1099-C if they wrote off a debt and they filed it on their taxes. What should you do? The first thing, if you see a charge off on your credit report, you should be contacting the eternal, the original creditor. And you should be asking them, did you charge off this debt? Yes, we charged off this debt. Have you filed this debt on your taxes as lost debt or lost income? And have you received a tax credit for the write-off? You can ask, and they must tell you that if they did and you never issued a 1099-C, you'll be able, that's a strategy to get that off your credit report because they're in violation and it comes with a hefty fine, right? So you need to understand that it is required for them to file that 1099-C. They also have a 36-month rule, meaning that they can carry that debt for 36 months, 3 years, and not file a 1099-C. Yes, it's ugly. It ain't fair, right? But they do have like a 36-month rule. They changed the rules up a little bit, but that is one of the rules that they have. It is an older rule, but it's a 36-month rule. Well, they have to file. They have up to 36 months to file that, right? So if they file it 3 years later, then issue you a 1099-C on a debt that was 3 years old, they're within their right to do that, right? So they could hold on to that debt. Maybe they want to file a tax burden that year. Maybe they're waiting for a year that may be a bad year and they need some extra tax burdens and that's what they do, whatever. But that's what they can do for up to 3 years and wait to file it, right? So, but if they don't file and they do file and you didn't get a 1099-C, that is a violation through the IRS and you can file a complaint with the IRS that you never received a 1099-C and you can get with that creditor and say, you never issued me a 1099-C and you wrote this off your credit report and they sold it to a collection company. Come on, think about that. So, you know, what I would do is write a letter to the original creditor. And you can do this. If you don't want to call them, do it within an affidavit requesting fact. That's what an affidavit is, information of fact. Write them an affidavit and say, I am requesting the information. Have you filed this or charged this off on your taxes and took a and reduced your tax burden when you wrote this off? Did you file a 1099-C with the Internal Revenue Service? You get that letter back and they say, yes, they did. And then you ask, when did you file it? Right? Remember, them affidavits are really powerful, right? Because if there's any violation, that is your leverage to get that removed off your credit report. Hey, I come deep. You know what I mean? I'll look at things and what does the court say? You know, what do people do when they go after original creditors for certain instances and what does the court say? So if you sent that affidavit and they reply, yes, we filed a 1099-C on you in 2020, you never received it, it's 2021. Man, there go your leverage to get it off. Now I'm sending a letter saying I never was issued a 1099-C. And then will you please remove this from my credit report? Just say they do. Now we're going to move to the next strategy. Just say they do issue you a 1099-C. Remember, that 1099-C that they issued you became income on your taxes, right? So it reduced their tax burden but increased your tax burden, right? So I'd write a letter saying, I received a 1099-C which reduced your tax burden, right? And you increased my tax burden. It is unfair for you to receive that and then turn around and cause income against me on my tax. I've settled with you because you've also settled. Could you please remove this in good faith because of the agreement that we made to settle this debt and remove this from my credit report? That's the strategy. That's the second strategy that you want to come at. Remember, look at it from the forefront, the legal side. Did you file a 1099-C with the IRS? When did you file that 1099-C? What was the date on that 1099-C? I did not receive a 1099-C, and that is required to you for me to get one. If you did get it, second strategy, Write them a letter. Let them know you filed a 1099-C. You reduced your tax burden on that 1099-C. I received that 1090, filed it on my taxes, and increased my tax burden. And now, out of good faith, can you remove this 1099-C because of our agreement and our settlement that we made with each other that you forgave this debt to remove this from my credit report? That's the strategy that you want to come with, and that's what you want to do.
Okay. I hope that have given you some detailed instruction. Now let's go right on back over here. And we're still dealing with this trust and these bonds and stuff. And we're going to come back and deal with that 1099 OID. I'm trying to cram as much of this information in as I possibly can. And we will be coming back with part three because we still got a lot of stuff to cover. Who is the beneficiary of the original trust? The beneficiary changes each time a new trust is created. You're the original beneficiary, though, if you choose to use your beneficial interest. If you choose not to use it, the citizens of the state that created it are the beneficiaries. This is part of the highest and the best use principle. If the property is not being put to the highest and best use, excuse me, it can be borrowed for a time and put to better use. You have not been using it. You have not filed any claims against it. So why should it just sit there not being used? The first trust was created for your benefit. If you choose to use it, remember, the reason the first party, the creator, creates the trust is for the second party, trustee, to manage the trust corpus for the benefit of a third party, a beneficiary. What is the trust corpus? The state complied with mom's request and created a straw man with the name and date of birth she requested. Mom is the one who put your physical description on the application for the certificate, evidence that the trust had been created. She delivered the description, 7 pounds, 11 ounces, 19 and a half inches long, and a footprint. All of this was on paper. The paper is the trust corpus. That was the consideration that was exchanged into the original trust. Exchanged for what? The ability to gain possession, not title, of houses, cars, shoes, books, etc., without paying for them. She applied for a social security number for it. She put it into commerce by getting it medical records, a daycare center matriculation number, a public school matriculation number, a league ID number, a library card, etc., etc., etc. All of these paper contracts between the trust and the agencies of municipal corporations are trust assets. These are all part of the trust corpus, the trust property. They are all property that can be used as evidence to contractual obligations the trust has or as collateral for debts the trust owns. It appears the trust considered benefits for which you owe an obligation because of your choice, your close relationship with the trust. Or these assets can be considered collateral for the debt the trust owes to you. Who is the trustee? Okay, let's get down in there. Let's find out about that. On the private side, if an appointed trustee resigns or dies, the trust corpus reverts to the beneficiaries or back to the trustor. It is useless to create a trust without appointing a trustee. The trustee created by the state upon mom's request must also have a trustee. The problem is depending on how it is going to be used. The creation of the trust is a matter of construction and operation of law. This is constructive. This is a constructive trust. Constructive trust definition. Trust created by operation of a law against one who by actual or constructive fraud, by duress or by abuse or confidence or by commission of wrong about any form of unconscionable contact, conduct, or other questionable means has obtained or holds legal right to property, which he should not, in equity and good conscience, hold and enjoy. Okay, we're going to stop right there, and we'll come back later on with that, because we only have, let's see, we got 29 minutes. So let's go down here and let's deal with this. Hold on here. Let me do a little quick refresh, if you don't mind. Let's deal with the 1099 OID publication. Now, we are going to be coming back to the 1099A, but let's go ahead on and put some of this OID into action here.
What's up, guys? It's your boy, the Bad Wolf, coming to you live from, well, my little office here. First, I want to thank everybody out there for supporting us. We are over 10,000. We are about to hit 11,000 people in a matter of days. That's fire. But once again, I did say that once we got over 10,000, it wasn't going to be a big thing. So I want to divert that energy and attention to thanking all of you guys who have sent in the donations, who have been spreading the word. It's very clear that you guys are really enjoying your freedoms and your rights versus privileges and benefits and everything else in that topsy-turvy world. So remember, guys, we are non-belligerent non-combatants known by the Department of State as non-U.S. nationals or non-U.S. citizen nationals or U.S. nationals. Everything else is not on the books legally, so that is why we use that term, okay? And if you guys see anybody else out there using any of this copyright information for negative reasonings, harassment, you know, whatever else, report them. Okay, that being said, we're going to jump off into the video. Let's see here. Okay, so with this one, we're going to be talking about the 1099 OID. Now, we already did some videos on that, so I'm not going to go into that specifically, but a lot of you guys have been asking me for information on, you know, how to, a little bit more in-depth information, how do they do it, where can I find information? Well, I'm glad you asked. So before we jump in, though, don't forget to hit that bell, like, subscribe. I would appreciate it. If not, at least continue to watch and tell three friends. Remember, everything in threes. All right, so this is the 10. So this is what you want to do. You want to Google 1099 OID publication 1212. Now, what is that? That is actually the official information packet or booklet or guide to the 1099. So if you guys want to get a little closer, not too close. Ooh, hi, hey, there you go. Now, I apologize because I do have the camera set on the same frequency as the monitor, but I think it's off a little bit, so I apologize that it's, for some of you guys, it's going to look like it's doing its yellow, blurry, whatever thing. Apologize, guys. Sorry. I'll try to block as much scan and just read. So once you do that, you're going to hit the first one. It's going to say IRS PDF. And because I already have it up, bang, shebang-a-bang. All right, so guide to the original issue discount instruments. All right, so this starts off with the contents. So like I said, I'm not going to go through the whole book, guys, because it's long, boring reading, and you guys would probably hate my guts. So the first page is what's new. Number two, in introduction. Three is going to be definitions and debt instruments in the OID, okay? Then they're going to talk about debt instruments not in the OID, all right? So starting on page four, you're going to start to look at the information for brokers and other middlemen, short-term obligations, long-terms, certificates of deposit, bearer of bonds, and coupons, backup withholdings, and then as you go to number six, here's where it jumps into information for owners of the OID debt, okay? Form 1099 OID, how to report them, instruments before 1982 and before 1985, after 1984, guys. All right. Strips, bonds, coupons, tax-exempt bonds and coupons, debt instruments, coupons purchased after 82 and 85, and how to get tax help. Okay, so one of the things, guys, for those of you who don't know, I do not get into each individual person's way of filing. I don't really help out with that. It's just I don't have the time, and, like, for me, it's just kind of boring and private. I mean, it's something you guys have to figure out how to do because you guys have to learn how to self-govern, all right? So when you do need help, if you can, you know, have, I mean, mostly if you're watching this, you probably have a computer or, a phone or something. So get the guide, and for the love of Jeebus, guys, call the tax people. That's what they're there for. Remember, they're not the enemy. The government, the system, we are in neutral territory with them, or, separate jurisdictions, but we're neutral. We are non-belligerents, non-combatants, non-resident aliens when you talk to them. So remember, tell them, hey, I'm a non-resident alien. I have a question about this. Or I'm utilizing the 1099 OID A or C or whatever, and I need help with this. Okay? That's what they're there for. They are paid from your SESTA K trust in order to help you. Yes, there are some DICKs who are in there and in the GOV and in the Department of Pole ICE, but a majority of them, guys, are still good people. They are Americans. They just don't know what's going on. And above all, they are there to serve you and help you. So if you can't find help from one, do not let that turn you off, to all believing they're all the same way. They're not all the same way. Even if 20 of them are just morons, there's going to be somewhere up the line where they're not, okay? And trust me, I've done a lot of things in my day where I had to call in a specialist, I had to go above people's heads and whatever else to get things done. That's just what it is, okay? And I hate to say this, but there was a guy who was becoming a police officer, but he was too smart to join the force, and so he sued them because they were hiring people who are low-level functionaries. That happens everywhere, guys. They don't want the average person, well, let me say this, they want the average to below average person, especially intelligence, to operate most of these positions because they don't ask questions. They're just happy to get a paycheck. I was told that I was too smart and overqualified for most jobs, all right? That's why I started working for myself, because places were like, well, if we hire you, you're just going to either take, the guy told me this, you're going to take my job, or else in a couple of years or whatever else, as soon as a better job comes along, you're going to probably leave. Well, yeah. But the whole thing was I needed money to work so I could do what I wanted to do, to put food on my table, take care of me and mine. So I should not be denied a job for that reason, for being too smart. But anyway, I digress. Let's get back to it. So when you need them, call the 800 numbers, guys, and ask them straightforward questions. You don't have to hide. There's not a secret thing we're doing here, where, we're U.S. nationals. We've got to hide it. No. We own this country. We own the land, okay? So use the resources that are there. That's what they're there for. So I actually have not gone all the way through this in detail. But let's take a quick gander. Useful items you may want to see. Okay, so right here, they're even telling you guys. Withholding of tax on non-resident aliens and foreign entities. Because remember, in some situations, certain things you do could be considered taxable events. Investment income and expenses, collateralized, blah, 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 yeah, whatever. Okay. Yes, I'm definitely not going through all this. Yeah, it's way too much. I just thought if anything sexy popped out, I would report to you while we're watching here. But okay. All right, so yeah, I'm not going to waste your time on that. A lot of information there, guys. If you want to know more, like I said, that's the file, that's the form. So when you guys are asking me questions, that's literally where I would go to.
All right, Mose, we're back. We're down to 20 minutes. Let me get back over here And, oh boy, what is this? Okay, I don't want to browse. I don't want to do this. Let's see here. Whoa, yeah. Okay, let me see here. Oh, can I go back? Alright, let's go. Can't open this file. Okay, you can't open that file. Alright, let's see. How about this file? You can't open that file. Alright, so I'm going to go back over here and I'm going to take you. Oh, I know why we can't open it, because I done shit everything down on it. Alright, let's move on down. Let's go back to the 1099A. What to do about a 1099C. Let's deal with some of that for a minute.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I wanted to make this quick video real quick about 1099 cancellation of debt forms that some of you may be getting in. This is a really jumping off real big right now because a lot of people probably had cancellation of debt either from student loans or credit card companies where the company just said we're gonna, you know, and it, what I think people get confused about is they're like, if they wrote off the debt, how are they able to come after me for?
Hold on, I think that's wrong one. Let me go down here and check this here. Let's see. Okay, I think this is it.
Hey everybody, this is Larelia. I am doing a video about something that is very common this time of year. And I want to share with you some information that has came across my desk. And I thought that, you know what, let me share it with other people because some people are going to have this concern. And that's why I titled this live stream. It's going to be really quick. 1099C and debt settlement. So if you see the tax form behind me, some people may have received that form in the mail. Now, 1099C cancellation of debt covers a lot of areas when it comes to debt. I'm only going to talk about credit cards. So if you see, let me see if I can do this on here without, okay, all right, without changing anything. I'm not sure, so I'm not going to do it. I'm not sure. But I'm only going to talk about credit cards. So let me paint the picture for you of why you may have gotten this in the mail and why individuals get it in the mail. If for some reason, and that's why I say when it comes to debt settlement and getting debt free and going rah, 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 let me put a disclaimer. I'm not here to tell you not to pay your debts, your bills, or what have you. If you feel like in your heart of hearts you want to pay your bills, by all means, you go ahead and pay them. But I am going to address how many individuals may have got this. So what happens is you may have had a credit card from an original creditor. And for some reason, you know, life happens, you didn't pay on it, and it got charged off. What was happening prior to, and that's why I said, you know, that's why I'm going to go into this video. What was happening prior to 2016 is that a lot of credit card companies were issuing individuals who had not paid on their debts. And like I said, they didn't work out any, you know, settlement amount or what have you. They charged it off. Not going to go into how a charge off occurs. I did a video about that. And for some way, after I do this live, I'll link it if you're not sure how, when, and how charge offs happen. So you had a credit card, you stopped paying on it, the credit card puts on your, the credit card company, the creditor, you are the debtor, puts on your credit report that it has been charged off. What happens is that many people get a 1099C in the mail for the amount that was charged off. Now, let me go into forgiveness and cancellation. And that is where the tax law, when credit card companies were issuing these out to individuals, the law was not clear to the consumer what was canceled and what was forgiven. Because what was happening prior to 2016 is that credit card companies were issuing these forms to consumers, and then a consumer would see it and say, okay, the debt got canceled. But that still did not mean that the credit card company, the original creditor, did not sell the debt to a debt collector. So what was happening is that the consumer got hit with the 1099-C, which you see behind me, as cancellation of debt, along with a debt collector is trying to collect on the debt. Because remember, cancellation and forgiving are two different animals. What consumers were thinking was that, oh, I got this tax notice in the mail. It says cancellation of debt. I'm free. I don't owe this debt no more. No. What does it mean? It was forgiven. So what was happening was, like I said, 1099-C come in the mail. Debt gets sold to a debt collector. Now the amount is still being collected on. And keep in mind, it was not forgiven. So that's why I want to touch on debt settlement. Now we're in the time of the year where people are getting their tax money. And there are going to be people, like I said, not putting no disclaimer out there to not pay your bills. But understand what you are doing when you decide to go to a creditor and say, I would like to pay this debt off and settle on an agreed amount. Many creditors will not tell you that in the event that you two agree to settle on the amount, that another portion, which is forgiven, because they will tell you, oh, okay, we'll settle. The other piece that you owe will be forgiven. Remember, there's a difference between cancellation and forgiven. If you two agree on a set amount, they can now issue you a 1099-C because you two decided on an amount that you were going to settle for. And remember, they told you they were going to forgive you for that debt. Now, that's a whole different, you know, that's a whole different subject, because now you are entitled to get to 1099-C. But keep in mind, they may not have told you, but you agreed to it. So don't be surprised if you got this in the mail. Now, for those who didn't agree on anything, this is where, please listen, because a lot of times these 1099-Cs may have been sent to you in error, and they can be rescinded. But now, you know, I'm not here to give you tax advice. You can handle this yourself, talk to your tax professional, but understand the law regarding cancellation of debt covers a lot of areas. So there is something that I'm going to discuss, and this is something you need to talk to your tax professional about. You get this form in the mail, you provide them with your tax, your paperwork. Now, remind you, cancellation of a debt is income. That's how it's looked at. So now, if you have $5,000, you know, I'm just going to use that example as the charge-off amount that a credit card company said, you know, got charged off, you are going to get taxed on that additional income. So now that could take you into a whole nother tax bracket for some people. For other people, that's taxes that, you know, no withholdings came out of. So you may not realize that you are supposed to file that tax form. And if a tax professional is, you know, providing you with the fiduciary duty of doing the right thing, the goal is that all they see is this 1099-C. So for them, they're going to file it because it's their fiduciary duty to tell you that, hey, you got this 1099-C and I have to file it as income. But now the other part that is not discussed and the tax professional may not know is this part. In 2016, Congress changed the law. So what happened was that going back to my original example of you had a credit card, you stopped paying the original creditor, it got charged off. Prior to 2016, when the ruling changed, if you hadn't paid on that charged off amount in 3 years, 36 months, the original creditor can now consider it as 1099-C, cancellation of debt, which is income to you. But in 2016, the law changed. So as long as you two did not agree on a settled amount that they said, okay, you owe $5,000, we're willing to take, you know, to take $1,000 and $4,000 would be income to you and cancellation of debt. As long as you didn't agree to anything, but it was just an amount that was out there that was charged off, in 2016, you were not liable to, that was not liable to you as a 1099-C. So I hope I explained that right. So let me explain again. 2016, the laws changed. The 36-month rule no longer applied. So there's a fine line because one may ask, well, Lorelia, what about if the debt was before 2016? It's a fine line. And that's why I said it's up to you and your tax professional to go to the tax law and see what the ruling says. Because you as a consumer do have the right, if you feel like it was sent to you in error, to have it rescinded. But don't feel like, oh, well, you know what? Heard a video on YouTube. I was told that it could get rescinded. So I'm just going to sit here and wait for the credit card company to be rescind. I can tell you, I only speak on things that I know that I've been through. I don't speak on things that I just heard, you know, on YouTube. And I wish I still had it, but if I could come across it, I will show it. I will do another video, same way I've showed other stuff, you know. In the past, some years ago, a credit card company sent me a 1099-C. Then after that, a week later, they sent me a form in the mail saying that it was sent to me in error. So I say this to you, there could be a chance that you can get a 1099-C, and there may be a letter come after that that says that it was sent to you in error. But don't wait on it. But don't wait on it. So that's why you have to read the ruling that's in the tax law. Talk to your tax professional and see if you qualify to go to your credit card company and say, hey, we didn't agree on nothing. You know, I know that this debt is out there and, you know, and it was charged off, but we never agreed on the settled amount because that was the ruling in 2016, that if the debtor and the creditor did not agree on the amount being canceled or forgiven or what have you, it is what it is. It's just a charged off debt. And if that is the case, then you have the right to go to the credit card company and say, hey, we never agreed on this amount, you know, in regards to it being canceled or forgiven or what have you. My right as a consumer is to have this rescinded. But understand, you have to know the law. You know, I'm giving you an abbreviated version. But if you go to, and I wrote this down, IRS Bulletin 2016-48, you just Google that, and you will be able to find some information. Now, any tax professional that is worth, I guess, them considering themselves a professional and they have a fiduciary duty to help their clients should assist you with understanding how this ruling works. How it works, because I know with myself, for my clients, I am clearly going through the understanding with them on a very detailed basis regarding this law. And so when they go to their tax professional, I serve as a liaison for the tax professional who may not know who is familiar with the law or who may, because remind you, cancellation of debt covers many areas. It covers student loans. It covers real estate. It goes into recourse and non-recourse debt. I don't want to bore you with the specifics, but, you know, if a tax professional do not know how it relates to credit cards, their duty is to do what they're there to do. Hey, you got this tax form and I have to file it. So that, so how does this, I did touch on that settlement, but, you know, just want to, you know, reiterate that again. If you are one of those people that, you know, plan on settling debts, you need to understand, you need to have some clarity on will a 1099-C be issued to you? That's a question you need to ask. So I'm not going to rant for any longer because I just wanted to quickly do this. I wanted to do this video, and I just wanted to share it with those because what I'm noticing now in the landscape of credit, there is a lot of watered down information. A lot of people who are just re-saying what a lot of other people have already said. And so that's why I'm giving you clear information for you to, it's not surface talk. I've told you there was an IRS ruling that 2016, that occurred in 2016, that you can now research yourself to understand it. Because the reason why you want to understand how this works is if you get this form in the mail and you think you're just going to call the credit card company and say, you know what, I think I was sent this in error and can you rescind it? Maybe for some people it may work, but other people it may not. So that is my message for you today. If you are interested in the credit dispute software, the link will be below this video. I do classes every.
Okay, we're down to 3 minutes into the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. What we are going to do is come back next Sunday. It'll be me and Dr. Walter Williams, and we'll be doing our broadcast the last Sunday of the month. Make sure you all stay tuned. Also, we're going to come back the following Sunday, which will be the first Sunday of the month of August. We'll be in here with part three of this stuff, and we'll be bringing some more foundational materials in. I'm not going to be able to say that I can finish up on this creditors and the bond documentation that I've been reading into the record. However, that does come along with your package with our secured party and creditor information, including the entire set of Black's Law dictionaries, my library, a ton of materials so you can go from point A to point Z. And being in the private, knowing the difference between public and private, being a secure party, your trust information, how to get your diplomatic immunity, access to your passports and all this stuff. And, of course, you have access to me, calling me directly if you got any questions once you get your package, and then I can assist you with that. And that's how we do that at talkingdebtelimination.org. Now, make sure that you go to talkingdebtelimination.org, fill out the contact us form, and when you do that, you put your email address in there. That'll come straight over there to me, and I'll rush you my free report in the mail. And that should give you some information about why we need to start getting out of the public. I mean, it is vital now. I mean, this thing is a well-oiled machine. There are people that's benefiting from this all over the United States. They're learning this stuff. And I have a three-hour blog talk radio program. I try to put as much information out as I possibly can to give you a gist of what's possible out there and what's really going on. And I'm going to be converting this video, as usual, down to a this audio down to usual as a video podcast up on YouTube, and then we're ready to roll on with the next segment. Also, for those of you who are on Facebook, if you send me a friend request, automatically send that over there to my group, Amano Secure Party and Creditor Group. We load you in there. You click on the file section. You got a ton of information right there. It doesn't cost you anything. You can read as long as you want to. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and close this thing down. And we will be coming back next week with an informative broadcast. Okay? And so it's been a plum pleasing pleasure to deal with y'all tonight, and y'all have a good night, okay? We'll be right back.